Welcome. This is Real Healing, Real Awakening with Phil Golding.
Is Phil Golding. I am offering you, through these series of programs, real healing and real awakening, using a five-step process for emotional healing, wisdom, and empowerment. It is wonderful to be able to present this material to you in this way. I truly hope that this is of great benefit to you. This particular program is designed to introduce the five-step process for healing and awakening. And it is the first of two episodes devoted to this purpose. So let's begin. All feelings or emotions can be traced back to two sources, love and fear. All feelings that are beneficial, life-enhancing, and healing come from love. All emotions that are detrimental, destructive, and painful come from fear. Everything we think, feel, say, and do in our journey through life is in some way an experience of these two opposing forces. For most of us, the experience of life is a constant pursuit of love and fulfillment, and the fear and pain of not being able to experience love and fulfillment. As a demonstration of what I mean, listen to these statements and see how many of them you relate to.
I struggle so often with sad and painful emotions.
Lately, I've been getting so worried and anxious.
I'm often overwhelmed with grief and have trouble letting go of hurts and regrets.
I'm still grieving. I just don't know how to move on.
I feel so frustrated and angry. Why isn't anything going right for me?
I feel cut off from the world. I don't seem to fit in.
I don't feel like I'm in control of my life. It's like others are pulling my strings.
Life is passing me by. I'm feeling like I'm being left behind.
I feel like a failure. I feel so helpless.
I feel so trapped in this relationship. There's just no love between us.
I've given up believing that I will ever find a fulfilling relationship.
I despair at all the suffering in this world. I don't see any meaning in all this chaos.
I want to live a meaningful life that is of benefit to others, but I don't really know where to begin.
I want to change my life, to create a life that reflects my potential, my dreams, but I find I seem to make so little progress.
I want to reach into the heights of self-mastery, but find myself defeated by my human limitations time and time again.
I want to really experience unconditional love as the giver and the receiver.
It is quite normal to identify with most of these statements, if not all of them. The challenges of human life confront us all. As I mentioned before, deep down we all basically want the same thing, love and fulfillment. All too often though, fear and confusion invade our life, or we just get taken over with day-to-day survival. There is a way to break free of these limitations. There is a way to overcome fear and suffering. In this day and age, there are many teachers giving this important message from the basis of their own personal experience. In many different styles and flavors, they are offering you a way to achieve this holy grail of love and fulfillment. If you step back far enough, you may be able to see that the same basic message is being communicated from these many different sources. This is good. It means we are onto something. Personal experience is like that. It gives us new and more powerful ways to deliver the same message. After all, what works, works. This knowledge has also persisted throughout the ages of human history, in many different cultures. It has been lost many times, only to re-emerge in another place and time as though it has a life of its own. We know this because we live in a wonderful time where we have access to recorded information of these teachings, and more importantly, the life examples of some of the great philosophers and sages throughout history. This type of knowledge is often called perennial wisdom, because it is wisdom that endures unaltered through time. It is through this perennial wisdom and personal experience that practitioners in the field of personal development and self-realization, such as myself, come to know the answers to overcome fear and suffering. What has been revealed by studying this perennial wisdom and by putting it into practice is a set of natural laws like physics, but laws that apply to the mind, or what is called consciousness, which is our ability to be self-aware and self-managing. These laws or principles of consciousness are also fundamental in their nature. This means that they apply to every human being. Their fundamental nature can be compared to the way the sun shines the same on everyone. When these laws are understood enough and consistently applied to the way you think, feel, and act, you will naturally enter into a journey of emotional healing and increasing mental clarity as years of accumulated confusion unravels and falls away. As a result, an increasing conscious awareness arises. Rather than just coping with the life that we don't want, consciousness and the right knowledge gives us the ability to create the life that we do want. There are two of these fundamental laws of consciousness that underpin and empower all genuine wisdom teachings. These laws are 1. The law of unconditional love, and 2. The law of total personal responsibility. These two laws are linked inseparably together like yin and yang, or the two wings of the one bird, as it is so beautifully put in Buddhist literature. In Buddhism, these two fundamental laws are described in the first two steps of the Noble Eightfold Path. These two steps are known as the wisdom steps. They are said to be the beginning and the end of the journey to enlightenment. The first step on the Eightfold Path is right view, which is ultimately unconditional love. The second is right intent, which is total personal responsibility. In Christianity, the first law is, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. God is regarded as pure unconditional love. This law, therefore, simply says, devote yourself to unconditional love. Jesus then placed a second stage to this ultimate law. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. A clear statement of personal responsibility, and an excellent way to assess the right thing to do in any given situation. This essential link between the two laws of consciousness is revealed when you consider that to be skilled in the law of total personal responsibility is to have the wisdom to know how to love unconditionally under any circumstance. Here you have intelligent love in action, a love that enables you to honor all without compromising yourself. There are still sections in the more orthodox psychology and medical profession that remain skeptical. There is a tendency to believe that evidence can only be impersonally gathered through statistical analysis in a laboratory, but the real world does not exist in a laboratory. There is also a lack of belief in the power of love. Those in my field of transpersonal psychology regard life as the laboratory, although we still value orthodox scientific research. In addition, though, we see ourselves as the experiment. We first apply these principles of personal change to ourselves, because if we can't put this to work in our own lives, how can we expect others to do the same? And how can we possibly know what it is really like? We endeavour to be less the out-of-touch expert and more the living example. This knowledge, therefore, can only be truly understood by personally opening one's heart to a direct experience of it, by endeavouring to put it into action. In this way, the knowledge is no longer just theory. Instead, with persistence, we are able to embody the knowledge as we are applying it to our lives. In other words, it becomes a part of who we are. This is what transforms knowledge into wisdom. Often we are able to experience the sensation of not just learning this knowledge, but in a deeper sense, awakening to it. We are able to gain awareness that the center of our own consciousness is where the source of this undying knowledge, this perennial wisdom, can be found. In 1984, at the age of 24, I discovered a way to break free of my own limitations. My life up to that point in time certainly did not reflect my potential. I had a difficult childhood for various reasons, such as having a sensitive character, experiencing the brunt of a brother's abusive behaviour, and having parents who, even though they were good people, were not able to give me the protection, nurturing and mentoring that I needed. These childhood difficulties and the conditioning that it gave me led to chronic depression in my teenage and early adult years. As a result, I dropped out of high school and then college. I felt unloved and unworthy. The depression further complicated my life by restricting my ability to make wise decisions on my own behalf, or I avoid making decisions altogether. I was stuck and afraid. I was also burdened with self-destructive thoughts and emotions, and around the age of 20, I seriously considered suicide. Chronic depression finally drove me into my first tentative steps to seek help. I began by attending self-help groups that used a 12-step program for personal development. I attended these self-help groups regularly for the next 12 years, as well as some counseling. Through these avenues of healing, I was awakened to perennial wisdom. As I learned to put these principles for personal change to work, my life began to improve accordingly. I didn't reach out for as much help as I could have, but I kept steadily growing, nonetheless. Even though I soon learned to function well, whenever I took a major project on, my chronic depression would be triggered once again. Finally, after 8 years of personal growth work that helped me in many areas of my life, I decided to spend some dedicated time focusing on my depression and nothing else. Using all that I had learned, I surprised even myself by finally breaking the back of my depression in just a few weeks. The final key for me was a deep enough level of self-acceptance, which is accepting responsibility to love myself just as I am every day. The two laws of consciousness working harmoniously together to free me of depression. This is when I came to deeply comprehend the essential nature of unconditional love and personal responsibility. I have experienced the feelings of depression at times since then, but I now know what to do about it. It can no longer take hold of me. You could now say that I am immune to this chronic disorder. Of course, I could have overcome my depression a lot sooner if I knew at 24 what I know now. But this was not the case. Besides, my experience has been my greatest teacher where becoming a psychotherapist is concerned. It has helped me learn that every problem can be turned into an opportunity. As I continued to work on myself, my natural interest in psychology began to blossom, Before I knew psychotherapy was to be my career, I was already well versed in the subject. My own higher consciousness knew this was my calling well before my more human mind was aware of it. By the time I finished university as a mature age student, I was ready to start my own practice as a psychotherapist. To help me in my work, I poured all that I knew out on paper in the form of a book on psycho-spiritual philosophy. I then felt I needed to boil it all down to a concise set of principles, which seemed to intuitively flow from my mind. The result is what I call the five-step process, and over the past 10 years of putting this process into practice in my own life and in helping others, it has more than passed the test of time. What I will be laying out for you in this program and in the coming programs is a powerful and effective process for emotional healing, wisdom, and empowerment. This series of programs is an outline of a workable strategy for personal change for anyone wishing to overcome suffering and unsatisfactory life conditions. The five-step process is used to directly work with your emotional wounds, fears, insecurities, and confusion. It is designed to develop your own compassionate relationship with yourself. This loving connection to your own human self is the doorway to harmony with life itself. The five steps are the backbone of my transpersonal psychotherapy practice, my meditation classes, and the self-help books that I write. The first step of the five-step process is titled self-acceptance, which refers to the law of unconditional love. The second step is titled personal responsibility, which of course is the second law of consciousness. These first two steps provide the foundation for the process. The third step is let go and tune in, which is about putting steps 1 and 2 into practice when it comes to looking after our inner self. It is about healing and clarity. The fourth step is living in the now. This is about how to put that clarity into action as we create our life in the world. The fifth step is live the process. This is about the recognition that this process has no end point. It is about looking after and evolving our mind throughout this particular life and beyond. So let us have a deeper look at the five-step process and how it fits together for the purpose of transforming your life, starting with step 1, total self-acceptance. To do this, I will read a condensed summary of the step, and then I will expand that out. The condensed summary goes like this. As human beings, we are totally acceptable and worthy. We have always been so, and always will be. This is absolute. Our human imperfections do not invalidate our worth as human beings. Self-condemnation, a mental confusion created by old emotional wounds, attacks our sense of worthiness and is the real reason for our suffering. This confusion can also cause us to blame others for the way we think and react. Deep down, we are crying out for love and healing. We can heal ourselves, however, because we are also souls born from the life force of unconditional love. A deep enough self-acceptance creates within our being a state of unity with the life force of love, which initiates healing on all levels. When we can give ourselves unconditional love on an ongoing basis, it is then much easier to love others unconditionally. True empowerment comes from knowing that we are souls of love, compassionately caring for our vulnerable human selves. That is step 1 in brief. So let's expand that out. To do this, I am going to have a philosophical conversation with the help of a few people from my meditation group. To quote the summary, As human beings, we are totally worthy and acceptable. We have always been so and always will be. Our human imperfections do not invalidate our worth as human beings. This is a fundamental statement that gives us a doorway into the true meaning of unconditional love. We grow up to be so confused about love because we are raised by imperfect human beings. We are all human, so there is no getting around this. Because we are human, our love is not going to be perfectly unconditional. Our parents carried within them certain fears and insecurities that interfered with their ability to love unconditionally. The same goes for ourselves. In order to break free of this dilemma, we need to see love as not human, but as a universal life force. In other words, love does not come from humans, it comes through humans, and is distorted as a result. If we consider that this life force of love comes through humans, then we must conclude that we are all plugged into this love directly.
Why don't I feel love then? Surely this life force, as you call it, is passing me by.
This life force of love cannot reject you any more than the sun can reject you. This force of love is unconditional, which means all that you need to do to qualify is exist. So congratulations, you're qualified.
Then why don't I feel it?
Because you are rejecting yourself, or condemning yourself, as the summary puts it.
Am I?
You may not be all that aware of it. Most often this self-rejection comes from deep mental programming that is now below your conscious awareness. You have become used to it. Occasionally this subconscious mental activity is triggered into conscious awareness by something that happens to you. You feel it in the form of sad or angry feelings, and confusion that takes a while to subside. For some people, this is a frequent experience, such as when I suffered depression. This mental activity creates a mind bubble around us that prevents us from feeling the life force of love. We are too busy feeling our self-rejection instead. It is like standing in the shade where the sun is blocked from hitting us directly. Because we become so confused early on as a child, we are not really conscious of the fact that this constant life force of love is there. Instead, we grew up to think that we can only get love if someone else gives it to us, which puts us in a real dilemma.
You mean we're always in the shade?
Most of the time, yes.
And we only see the sun reflected off other people, rather than experiencing it directly?
Indeed. In fact, Plato said something very similar when he was trying to explain the nature of reality using his cave analogy. Because the life force of love is always there, we don't have to look for some perfect example of love from some other human being, although a wise mentor is always useful. Instead, we can become consciously aware of our own direct relationship with this ultimate love.
How? How can I have a relationship with a life force?
By being this love.
That doesn't make sense. How can I be this love if I'm human? Isn't this where the problem starts?
Yes, it is. But we are much more than just human. As the summary points out, we can heal ourselves because we are also souls born from the life force of unconditional love.
How do I know that? I don't feel like I have that sort of potential. I don't even feel like a soul. I'm not even sure what it is to be a soul.
There is no need to get stuck on that. You can't get to this kind of love through an intellectual approach, although knowledge prepares us to take the right steps. You don't even have to feel strong emotions for it to work. The deeper feelings of love often come later as you learn to open up more. There is a more subtle feeling that most of us have right from the start, though, and that is simply knowing that unconditional love feels right. It feels right that it must be the highest thing there is, even if we don't know how to experience it.
So how can I be love?
By setting the intention to accept yourself as you are in every moment, and by doing your best to act on that intention. It doesn't matter if you're not very good at it. You are human after all. You are therefore choosing to put your hand up as a representative of this life force of unconditional love to your own human self. By doing this, you begin activating a bigger part of yourself, your soul self, or higher self as it is often referred. It does not matter how many times you forget to do this. Your forgetfulness is just another opportunity to accept your humanness. Unconditional love means that there is no reason to reject or condemn yourself for simply being human. Because you have set a strong intention to totally accept yourself as you are, this intention is now strong in your awareness. You will therefore be more aware of when you reject yourself. It is then simply a matter of making another choice.
As you were speaking, I was trying to imagine myself doing this. I can see that even if I'm not very good at accepting myself as I am at first, by setting this strong intention and doing my best to keep acting on it no matter what, I am bound to have a different experience. Any increase in self-acceptance is bound to be good.
Yes, you've described that well. If you carry a lot of pain within you, if your self-rejection is very strong, self-acceptance on a deep level can be a difficult step to negotiate at first. Transforming your life depends on it, though. So a very strong intention to be your own loving guardian and a strong faith in the power of love is needed in order to make real progress.
Therefore, it is my responsibility to accept myself unconditionally.
Exactly. Now, to help you more deeply understand the reality of unconditional love, I will take you through a contemplation exercise. You can either go into meditation as I talk you through this, or you can just listen normally, depending on what is going to be appropriate for you. Imagine yourself as a newborn baby lying on a bed with you as your adult self looking down at this delicate, vulnerable, and precious being. Now, as you are looking down at this beautiful little being, can you say in your heart that there is anything about this baby that is unworthy of love? Can this baby do anything that makes it truly unworthy of love? For instance, it may frequently wake you up during the night by crying, or it may dirty its nappy a number of times a day. Neither of these experiences are very pleasant to have to deal with as the carer of this baby. Is the baby still worthy of unconditional love, even when it acts this way? Some people actually get angry at this unconscious behavior of a newborn baby. Is the problem with the baby or the carer? Now your child is 1 year old and crawling around, getting into whatever it can reach. Occasionally this little toddler is difficult at meal times and can still keep you up at night. Your toddler is just doing what a toddler does. Is there anything about it that is unworthy of unconditional love? Now your toddler is a delightful 2 year old and becoming a real handful. He, she is now walking and therefore getting into more things. There is a lot of boundary testing going on as your toddler exercises its awakening will in fits of defiance. This little one is also starting to talk in the cute way that toddlers do. Is there anything about this child that is undeserving of unconditional love? Would anyone be justified in getting angry and judging this toddler if he she accidentally knocks over and broke that prized porcelain jug that you got for your wedding? Again, This child is just doing what a 2-year-old does. If the carer gets angry and lashes out at the child, where does the problem lie? The carer or the child? Now your child is 5, very active and talking fluently. Even though he or she is still quite the bundle of joy, there is already some negative conditioning evident in the child's mind. You are already having a tussle with your child's newly forming ego. And yet even now this 5-year-old is just doing what a 5-year-old does. Where does the responsibility for the child's social conditioning lie? With the child or the child's carers? Has the child conditioned his or herself? Again, is there anything unworthy about this 5-year-old child? Is the child still worthy of unconditional love? A child who is still so vulnerable and dependent on the quality of care that it receives. And now you are watching yourself as a 10-year-old, playing with friends and going to school. Your child freely interacts with the rest of the family, a unique personality clearly emerging. He or she is full of hopes and dreams for the future and yet still vulnerable and dependent. There is the occasional conflict with various family members as a need for independence is slowly emerging. Negative conditioning is clearly visible. Deep behavior patterns have been well established. Still, this 10-year-old is just doing what a 10-year-old does. Is this growing child still worthy of unconditional love? If a carer withdraws their love from this child, where does the problem lie? Now you are watching yourself as a 15-year-old, well into puberty and the new social scene. Your adolescent self is spending less time with family and instead seeking peer approval in his/her social group, sometimes in defiance of parental guidance. This leads to frequent conflict. He or she is now experiencing the first forays into dating and relationships with its inevitable excitement and at times crushing disappointment. Your adolescent self is often moody and even behaves a bit oddly as he or she searches for an independent identity. Childhood conditioning is now deeply entrenched and overlaid into this youth's natural character. Again, your adolescent self is just doing the best that he or she can. Should your adolescent self be judged for that, condemned for that? Should guidance come with condemnation or unconditional love? How would it have been if you were given unconditional love all through your childhood? How would it have been if you felt safe to share your deepest fears, emotions, joys, and dreams with your parents all through your childhood and received nothing but loving guidance, caring, wise discipline, and encouragement that never made you wrong as a person? Isn't this what we deserve as children? No matter how many mistakes we made or how confused we may have become at times, how can a child be held responsible for his/her own upbringing? Surely the responsibility lies with the carer. Even as an adult, the same rule applies. Even having to firmly say no to a person's confused and misguided behavior can be done without withdrawing unconditional love. When you look inside yourself now, you are looking at and feeling this child, a child that is still longing for, looking for that unconditional loving acceptance. You can find this child in your most vulnerable feelings. You are now the adult, and this inner child now belongs to you. Your carers did the best they could. Their job is now finished. Now it is up to you. How have you been treating yourself, your child self? How would it be if you lovingly accepted yourself unconditionally, in a real heartfelt, responsible way, instead of judging yourself and mistreating yourself whenever you make a human mistake or don't supposedly measure up? Even as an adult, we are just doing the best we can. Mistakes are a natural part of being human. This deep form of self-acceptance enables our ego to wake up from its blind judging and blaming and instead consciously embrace and care for this human self of ours. With self-care, healing and growth are inevitable, along with maturity and wisdom. It is through self-acceptance that we can increasingly awaken our consciousness to higher states of unconditional love, the power to heal the deepest fears and confusions. This takes us to step two, total personal responsibility. The condensed summary of step two goes like this. Personal responsibility is the total commitment to care for ourselves in the spirit of unconditional love. By identifying ourselves as being souls of conscious awareness, empowered by unconditional love, we have the power to stand apart from our wounded and confused mind. With the heightened awareness that this attachment gives us, we gain the power to see through our confusion. Whenever we experience hurt and discontent, we have another opportunity to care for and heal our painful thoughts and emotions. As souls of conscious awareness, we have the ability to compassionately accept our humanness and to learn from our mistakes. Our pain is our responsibility. We are not victims. We accept total responsibility for everything we think, feel, say, and do. As conscious adults, we have full authority over our own lives. No matter what circumstances we are in, no matter what others may say or do, we have a sanctuary within the unconditional love we give to ourselves. With this knowing, we can choose the best path to take that serves our highest good, whilst remaining compassionate to others. We can also care for ourselves by reaching out for help. Step two reveals to us the vital importance of this absolute commitment to care for ourselves, and how this commitment enables us to recognize how to genuinely care for others without compromising ourselves. This is wisdom. End of summary. Step two, total personal responsibility, is about my commitment to be the loving carer of my own human self, and to accept full responsibility for my mind and its fears and reactions.
We seem to have covered much of this already.
That is because steps one and two are so closely linked. Our mind is the foundation of our entire experience of life. If we don't take care of our own mind, then a whole life will suffer. The way to do this successfully, in a way that is also for the highest good for everyone else, is with love.
Does that mean I have to love everyone else unconditionally as well? That's a big one.
It is not that you have to. It is your choice. As the summary says, as conscious adults, we have full authority over our lives. Your life will work out best if you do, however. Love always works out best.
Does that mean that I have to even love unconditionally those who mistreat me? Does that mean I just keep forgiving them and let them walk all over me?
It certainly does not. But that is a common and often tragic misconception. If that is what you are doing, then you have forgotten your personal responsibility to give yourself unconditional love. You can say no to someone's unacceptable behavior and yet still accept them as a person. Total personal responsibility means that I will accept responsibility for everything I think, feel, say, and do. But the same also applies to every other adult human being, whether or not they want to accept that responsibility themselves. You can't necessarily make them accept responsibility for their actions, but you do have the authority to choose how you respond to their reactions. Therefore, when you say no to someone in the spirit of unconditional love, you are saying no because you are choosing to take loving care of yourself. It is a self-responsible, or to put it another way, a self-love choice. The choice is made by getting in touch with what feels best for you, in terms of honestly caring for yourself, which does not involve putting blame or condemnation on the other. What that self-responsible choice isn't going to be is an act of hate, vengeance, etc., at the person that you are saying no to. You are looking after yourself, but you are not abusing anyone in the process.
But the person I say no to may not like me to say no to them. They might be unhappy or even angry. Aren't I responsible for that?
No, certainly not. Not if you have done your best to say no in a respectful way, and you don't have to be perfect about it either. If the other person gets sad or angry, then they are doing that to themselves by not taking responsibility for their own mind and their own actions. In addition, caring for yourself means you will do your best not to react to their reactions. You don't have to argue with them. You don't have to even convince them. If your decision to say no feels like the best way to care for yourself, and it is basically free of a desire to harm the other person, it is then very likely to be the best choice for everyone, whether the other person understands that or not. These things have a way of proving themselves as time goes on.
So I have to face up to my own fear, insecurity, anger, and so on. Total personal responsibility says that there's no one to pin it on. That feels like a big, heavy weight to me.
That is your non-acceptance of yourself that you are feeling. You are not realizing the power of your potential. Trying to control others, trying to force your will on them in order to fix your pain or stop yourself from being hurt is futile. This approach simply creates more conflict and more pain. This approach to life ensures that you remain powerless to take charge of your life and dependent on others to give you security and to make you happy. This is the real burden. In this vain attempt to protect ourselves, we are not realizing that the real enemy is within. What is really hurting us is our lack of acceptance, our lack of love for ourselves. This is why accepting total personal responsibility, to love yourself unconditionally, is the key to actually freeing yourself from all burden. Love is the sanctuary, love is the healer. By embracing your humanness with your own loving acceptance of yourself, you are then shielded from being hurt by others. You don't have to be perfect. You are accepting your humanness. You are doing your best to learn from your human mistakes. You accept full responsibility for your own life. If other people judge you, condemn you, attack you for your human mistakes, from within this sanctuary of self-responsible love, you will know that their attack on you is about their own confusion. You will know that you are worthy of unconditional love no matter what mistakes you may make, no matter what you may inadvertently do that happens to upset someone.
I can see that there is a lot to learn with this.
Much more than we first realize. Your own confusion about the true nature of love is the real cause of our suffering. By accepting responsibility to be the loving guardian of your humanness, your own mind in other words, you are directly getting to the root of your suffering and applying the best healing balm to it, and that is love. Not only that, you don't have to wait around for someone else to love you first. Love is already at your beck and call. The main obstacle in this journey is really your own confusion, which naturally takes time to unravel. By setting that strong intention to be the loving guardian of yourself, awakens a real conscious awareness of yourself and what your mind is up to. It is like a bigger you recognizes your role as the parent of your vulnerable human self, as though you have an inner child to look after, and in many ways that is true. By recognizing yourself as the parent of your inner child or human self, You are having an experience of yourself as soul, or Buddha nature if you're a Buddhist, or Atma if you're a Hindu. There are many ways to relate to this consciousness that can be awakened within you. It is something that people have been waking up to throughout human history. As it says in the summary, by identifying ourselves as being souls of conscious awareness, empowered by unconditional love, we have the power to stand apart from our wounded and confused human mind. With the heightened awareness that this detachment gives us, we gain the power to see through our confusion. Whenever we experience discontent, we have another opportunity to care for ourselves and heal our painful thoughts and emotions.
I thought experiencing myself as soul or higher self would have to be some sort of profound spiritual or mystical experience with lots of bliss and, well, who knows what I was thinking. I just didn't realize it was that mundane in a way.
What I am talking about here is transcendence. In other words, awakening to the experience of the reality that you are more than your limited mortal human self. It can be a profound experience, or it can just slowly creep up on you. It is nonetheless a very practical experience, and so it should be. It is about learning what it means and what it feels like to take charge of your mind and therefore your life, even if it is in small faulting steps at first.
Where do children fit into this? Does total personal responsibility apply to them also?
Not in the same way. And of course we have an awareness of this in our society. In order to have the ability to be personally responsible for our mind, we must have developed an adult capacity for conscious awareness. Of course, this ability or capacity is not very awakened in most adults at this time in human history, but the capacity is there nonetheless. The soul is where this potential lies. A child is still physically developing, even though the soul of the child may have the same potential as any adult. Being a child is like a television set that hasn't got all its circuitry in place. The television signal is beaming in, but the limited circuitry can't yet fully process it. To extend this analogy, the TV is also a computer that needs to be programmed effectively in order to fully function. This is why children need adults to be conscious awareness for them and to provide them with good mentoring.
Children seem to be in a very vulnerable position. Shouldn't I blame my parents for the problems in my life as an adult?
Blaming or condemning our parents for the mistakes they made is hard not to do as we're grappling with our negative conditioning. As parents, we are certainly responsible for the well-being and upbringing of our children, and it is our responsibility to learn how to be good parents. We are all human, however. From a larger standpoint, we are all children in the process of growing. This is the nature of the human experience. In order to make our way in life, we need to accept this reality and work with it. Once we have matured into adulthood, real conscious awareness is at our disposal. Even though our childhood may have given us many handicaps, by accepting full guardianship of our own life, in partnership with the life force of unconditional love, we have access to the power to overcome all obstacles in life. This, I believe, is the ultimate meaning of life in this world. It is not what happens to us, it is what we do with it. In this way, it does not matter whether you are wealthy and privileged or poor and downtrodden. Unconditional love and total personal responsibility still must be your guiding light. For the wealthy and privileged, the challenge life may be setting them is charity and service. Instead of being seduced by their good fortune and being fooled into thinking that they are more special than those less fortunate, the challenge for the poor and downtrodden may be faith and perseverance, to recognize their true worth despite their humble beginnings, or how others may treat them. You can tell how awakened a person's consciousness is, how evolved they are as a soul, by observing these indications.
The handicaps of our childhood conditioning seem to me to be a huge obstacle to face and overcome.
Yes, for many it certainly is. As a part of healing the past, it is important to fully validate the suffering we have experienced as a child. This is not about being a victim. This is about recognizing what there is to heal within ourselves. When we realize the real extent of our suffering as a child, there is that temptation to lash out at those who caused this at the time. But this pain is ours to heal now, and most importantly, we can heal it, and awaken to a great deal of wisdom in the process. The wisdom gained is the great compensation for the hard trials of healing and growing. On the other hand, in an attempt to accept responsibility for our lives and forgive those of our past, we often gloss over the real extent of our suffering at the time. We then get confused when the pain of the past keeps interfering with our life, even as we are trying to move on. Sometimes the pain can be coming from even deeper levels than childhood, which can add an intensity to the experience that is very confusing. I will talk more about this in a future program. It's important to understand the difference here between justice and healing. Healing depends on you, and you alone, of course with the help of others, but you are in control of your healing. Justice is different. You are pursuing justice. It depends on whether another person either is going to be brought to justice or whether they are able to face up to what they have done and do their best to make amends. Unfortunately, many people think they have to find justice before they can achieve healing. But quite often, even if justice is achieved, healing is still not achieved. Healing depends on you. You cannot depend on another for your own healing. Whether you pursue justice, achieve justice, or not achieve justice, you can still heal. Healing can begin at any time. It is your mind, it is your heart, it is your domain. You are in control of that process. Mastering our mind on any level is a great challenge, but it can be done. And the number of those who have gained good skill in self-mastery is rapidly increasing for reasons I have mentioned earlier in the program.
If I don't need others to love me in order to be loved, does that mean I no longer need relationships? What is this going to do to the relationship that I am in?
I'm often asked this question. The ego can't comprehend a love that is free of dependency. In reality, though, the more secure you are in your direct relationship with the life force of love, the more confident and comfortable you are with being open and close to people. Because you accept your own humanness, you'll accept theirs as well. You are less likely to react to petty differences and momentary confusions. When there is an issue that needs to be dealt with between you and your partner, you are more inclined to approach this in a respectful and loving way. In other words, the more centered you are in your own inner sanctum of unconditional love, the more love you have to freely give to others. We become so full of love that we naturally overflow with it.
But what advantage would there be in having a relationship if I'm so overflowing with love?
If you are an enlightened master, then perhaps that might be the case. The love of such an enlightened person would equally spread out to everyone. Not too many of us are enlightened masters, though. I can give you two main reasons for the importance of personal relationships where the rest of us is concerned. The first is to have someone to experience the ideals of love with. We haven't yet mastered the dance of love, so we still need a partner to practice with. The second reason is a part of that practice. we are going to step on each other's toes occasionally. This is where we encounter our humanness, our fears and insecurities that we may not have a chance to awaken to, other than through an intimate relationship. Parenting children provides similar opportunities, of course. The need of the soul to evolve through relationships is, of course, intertwined with our natural biological desires for companionship, sexual desires, and the desire to parent children. Here the life force of love has beautifully designed an opportunity for self-realization, for giving and receiving love, and for eventually becoming love itself. It is all the great tapestry of love that is the human experience. Therefore, steps 1 and 2 are about our commitment to care for and master our own humanness, and our own mind in particular. Without a never-give-up commitment to yourself, you have very little to work with. No matter how much others may try to help you, if you are not willing to help yourself, then little will be achieved. Even if your old conditioning causes you to believe that you have nothing to offer, that you don't have what it takes to learn, don't believe it. Everyone has the power within them, you included. Give it a chance, you will be amazed. Never give up on yourself, no matter how many disappointments confront you, and life will never give up on you either. The key to your happy and fulfilled life is in you. No one else has it. Your commitment is the doorway that allows the power of life and love to enter your heart. This concludes the first episode of Real Healing, Real Awakening. Next week, I will be taking you through steps 3, 4, and 5. That is step 3, let go and tune in, which is the healing and evolving our inner self step. And step 4, live in the now, which is creating our life in this world. And step 5, live the process, which is making this our entire lifestyle, our way of life. I want to conclude this talk with a poem that I wrote some time ago, called The Heart of Consciousness, which is really about the path of healing and awakening. Step directly into the river of life, with your breath flowing and your heart open. Yes, even into the raging torrent of the mind. Your heart is like a vast and tranquil ocean. The mind is but a mere trickle compared to the limitless power of the heart. Let all things flow through you. Resist them not. Watch, feel, and learn. To the ocean of the heart all is equal and beautiful, even as the ego judges and complains. Like a loving and wise parent, the heart watches over the ego, this little child of mind, and guides this lost child back to the safety and bliss of her bosom. So you think you are this mind. Watch it come and go with its endless petty fears and squabbles. Let it die in the face of its fears. Behold, you still remain. What you thought you needed is but trinkets compared to the treasure of the heart. All will be provided to those who serve the heart. So you think you are this body. Does it not grow old and die? Watch how it comes and goes as well. It is a temple, they say. Do not waste time endlessly adorning it. Spirit dwells stronger in simple dwellings that are sturdy and well kept. But the dwelling will inevitably crumble, while spirit remains blazing in the heart of conscious awakening. So who are you then if not this heart? Who are you then if not the watcher of things coming and going? Note how the raging torrent strengthens and expands your open heart. The challenges of life are but food for the spirit of awakening. Your breath of consciousness is the doorway of life. Let all enter through this door and be embraced by the heart. Limitless expansion is your very destiny. As mind and body fade, yet this awakened heart still remains, as alive and vital as the day it was born. Be this heart, this loving guardian of the little body mind. Be the embracer of life in all its sounds and its colours. Know the limitlessness of your foundations and the power of the love that you are. Fear is but the doorway to your destiny. Enter it gladly and feel the life surging in you. Note how you soar above these turbulent waters. As this flaming heart, this ocean of spirit, pour yourself into life and light the way for others to follow. Claim your destiny in every mundane step. There is no perfection on this path of awakening, only the strivings of those who won't give up. Perfection is the reward of persistence, and for those who forget the reward. To lead the way is to be the way, to shine in your very humanness, in the beauty of your imperfection. The heart is an ocean of compassion pouring out to all, and yet allowing all to find their own way. Wisdom is the fruit of right action, forged on the anvil of trial and error. Make your mistakes gladly, for they are the stepping stones to enlightenment. That's it for the show, and I hope it's been of benefit to you. And I just want to leave you with this thought. Be a guardian angel to your vulnerable human self, and you will always find love will warm your heart. For wisdom is intelligent love in action.